Welcome to the Picture Book Look podcast. I'm Kim Chafee.
And I'm Kirstie Call. Together, we'll share some of our favorite picture books and chat with their creators to explore the journey from story idea to bookshelf.
We'd love you to join us as we take a picture book look. Feeling stuck in your creative journey? Needing to change your narrative? Everything you want is possible.
As a therapist trained life coach for creatives, I'm excited to help authors like you create clarity and build self-confidence so you can achieve your dreams.
Kirstie can help you get the drama out of your life and into your art. Visit kirstiecall.com. That's KirstieCall.com and register for a free consultation today.
Hooray! I can't wait for us to work together to get you where you want to be. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Kirstie.
Many times what I'm saying seems like poppycock or codswallop, but sometimes I say things that actually make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly do. But sometimes I do feel a little hornswoggled by your shenanigans, which actually leads perfectly to today's book, Hornswoggled, written by Josh Kroot and illustrated by Jen Harney, is filled with playful language, and it will have you laughing from beginning to end.
Absolutely. We are so excited to chat with Josh and Jen about their creative process. Let's talk.
What I love about this book is not only that it's hilarious, but it's hilarious and I want to read it again right as I'm finished the book. Like, it makes me want to just pick it up and go back to the beginning and read it all over again. And I think even for funny books, that can be hard. So Josh, how did you come up with the idea for this hilarious story?
Okay, I'll back up. So I used to work in a bookstore in Pasadena called Vroman's Bookstore, which is a big, famous independent bookstore over there. And one day, the cool thing about working in a big independent bookstore in Los Angeles is famous writers and illustrators come in all the time. So a particularly famous one came in, and I was like nerding out. This is while I was just starting to write picture books for the first time. And so I asked him some advice, and one of his advice was that sometimes he just draws the cover first before he comes up with the book. And he'll have a cool idea for a cover. And they're like, well, I would love to pick up that book. Now I just got to write a story that is worthy of that cover. And so obviously I'm not an illustrator, but for me, it was the title was the first thing that came to me. So I was actually watching an interview with Mark Hamill, who plays Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
And he used the word hornswoggled in this interview.
Oh,
and
how funny.
I knew the word, but I had never heard it used just in everyday conversation before. And I was like, that's such a great word. I was literally just thinking, I would love to see that on the spine of a picture book.
Totally.
You know, I've worked in the bookstore before. You see them, if you're lucky, you can space them out. But usually there's like a huge bunch of spines. And and I was like, I would love to see the title Hornswoggled exclamation point.
Totally.
What on earth would that be? And so that's where the idea had started, is I just had a title and had to figure it out from there, which is unusual. I've never done a book like that before where it was the title first.
Very cool.
I love
that.
Very
cool.
So Jen, what made you say yes to working on this project?
Honestly, Hornswoggled sucked me in. I saw the title. The first art note I read said armadillo.
Yeah.
Done. If there's an armadillo, you want Jen to illustrate your book, just put an armadillo in the art notes.
Ooh, and good to know.
Good to know.
Yeah, insider note. Jen is a sucker for an armadillo. I see armadillo. I'm in. But as I read it, my little pop culture brain started twirling, and it was, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, I love that movie.
As I read it,
yes.
I'm going, oh, I can see this one already. And when I know what it's going to look like, I know that's a project I want to be on. If I can see the color palette and the characters, and there's an armadillo, I'm done. So it was not a hard sell for me. It was fun right off the bat.
That's so interesting because in the original version of the book, it was all all Southern animals. So I live in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
And so initially, I know there's now like, what else is in there? There's like bison. Yep. And, but initially it was going to be much more Southern. So it's going to be like polecat instead of skunk. And it was going to be, nice. There was going to be, like a Florida skunk ape. And like it was all Southern. And actually the original draft, they said I'd done been hornswoggled, which okay. I still love that. But publishers were a little like, oh, no, let's not do that. Let's make it more grammatically correct. So Oh Brother Art, that was definitely in my head when I was writing it. And also some friends of mine who I did my dedication to, that's their sense of humor. And then growing up, I was a weird kid. So I was reading the old comic strip Pogo, which is like from the 50s to the 70s.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's set in the Okefenokee Swamp in, I think, Southern Georgia. And all the animals talk in crazy fun dialect. And it's very similar madcap like energy where everyone's like running around and no one's being rational. And so it's cool that translated, even though a lot of that got cut out.
Love all the shenanigans in this book. It's just so fun.
It really is.
And even like, I love the yellow palette that you chose too, which I assume you got.
I'm so glad. It was total, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? As soon as I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this one's going to be yellow. I'm like, I know publishers don't always like yellow covers. I was hoping I would get away with the yellow color palette because I'm like, it needs it. It really, it's
perfect.
It's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So they were so open to anything I wanted to try, which was great too.
Well, that's so cool too, because it's interesting to hear that you say that a lot of books aren't yellow, because I've noticed that too, where it's to me, it really pops. It stands out.
It does. It
Marketing doesn't
does.
Like yellow.
Very interesting to me. I wonder why.
Marketing doesn't like yellow. These are little things you learn as you work in publishing. Marketing doesn't like yellow.
Interesting. I think they might change their mind now.
After this book, yeah.
I mean, it totally works. So, Josh, can you give us a little bit more? You've been kind of touching on the writing process, but how do you get that first draft down? Are first drafts hard for you?
Sometimes, yeah. I've had some projects where most of a first draft will just pop out. I usually have the beginning come out pretty quickly, and then it's like it's easy to make promises. finishing the promises is harder. So this, mm-hmm. I remember writing out like the first page or two where, so I was like, okay, so Hornswoggle, what on earth would a book called Hornswoggle be about? And so I started thinking about the horn as part of it. And, you know, Hornswoggle means to get tricked. So I was like, well, okay, what if there's like a deer that gets tricked out of his horn? And so he just wakes up, and it took a weird turn very quickly where like it's honestly like this sort of body horror kind of thing where it's like he wakes up and instead of an antler, there's a tennis racket. And I just thought that was so absurd. And then I was like, well, what if he runs and it just becomes a pattern? And this was the book that I've had some other books that were just obviously very good ideas to begin with. It's like, well, this is clearly a good character. This is clearly an idea. This is kind of the book I kept waiting for people to say no to because it was so strange. I thought it was funny, but I was like, there's no way other people will like this. And then I showed it to my writers group and they were like, no, we actually like this. You should keep working on it. And then I showed it to my agent and she was like, yeah, this is good. Let's send it to some publishers. And then I sent it to the publisher and they're like, yeah, let's do it. And I couldn't believe it. Like I kept waiting for the red light. But so a lot of it was then figuring out, okay, so what are ways that you could take this idea of like an animal losing their prized possession and getting swapped out with something really silly and then escalating that. So doing it, it was kind of a balance of making sure it wasn't completely absurd, you know, like you could still imagine it being like, you know, donuts instead of glasses, where it's something that could be, you know, it exactly what it is and what got swapped out without having to just say it a bunch of times. And then a lot of figuring out the I really like mysteries. So this was essentially turned into a whodunit, and it's like, okay, well, who could possibly, I knew I wanted the fox to be outfoxed at the end, cause I was the most obvious of the words. And cause that was the other thing I noticed when I was looking up Hornswoggle, I was like, okay, let me look up some synonyms and stuff for Hornswoggled. And I began to notice all of these other strange sort of like American slang words that had like animals in their roots. Like, outfox is one that we all know, but there was other ones like
hogwash.
Yeah, hogwash and codswallop and to get buffaloed and to be skunked even was a verb.
Yeah.
Codswallop, you know, cod is like a fish. So I was like, this is interesting. What if I could just use it? Because I love words. Like, I really like, if you couldn't tell from the book, I really like silly words. And I've always just liked the sounds of words. And all these words are just very fun to say.
Definitely.
So it became, then I was like, okay, well, what if there was, this animal did this and this animal connects with that word. Like, originally there was going to be a panda bear that got bamboozled because bamboo. So it's just puns like that. And then trying to figure out, okay, well, who is the actual culprit? And that's when I was like, well, what if, because the other tricky thing was, how do you get across the definition of these words, you know, read aloud?
Right.
So like, what if there's an animal who's seems to be like just the helper, and then turns out that they've got their own game the whole time. So that's where the armadillo comes in that Jen likes so much.
Well, it's just so well written. And it's funny because it's already funny, but then Jen, you add so much humor with your art. It's all about, you have these expressions on their faces when they learn they've been hornswoggled or buffaloed or handed a load of codswallop. Their faces are just perfect.
A book isn't finished to me until somebody has their head thrown back in a Muppet scream. a book isn't done until there's at least one head thrown back in a Muppet scream.
Okay, I'm going to go back and read all your books now. I love it.
Yes, every one of them. It's not done until somebody's doing the Jim Henson Muppet scream. So
I love that so much. I love it. I
love it so much.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Share a little bit more about your illustration process for this particular story?
This one was so easy for me because it was there. It was there. It drew itself, basically. Once I figured out what it was going to look like and the animals were there, so it just kind of drew itself. I had to do a little research into like 1930s fashion and stuff like that because I wanted that in there. Hardest thing for me was trying to figure out how to get a fish into a bathing suit.
Yes.
And a snake into a three-piece suit. Those were the big issues for me. Was how do you get a fish into a bathing suit? Because every other animal had clothing on. I can't have a nudist fish.
No.
So she had to be in a bathing suit. That was the toughest. The toughest problem was how does a fish go into the bathing suit? But a lot of the problem, not even problem, but the thing was there was so much action to the setup. There was a lot of, they had to see this, then they had to see this, and then the reaction. So right. I had to figure out a way to do we have to see this part, we have to see this part, and we have to see this part. And I've got one page to show that. That's where the insets came along. Because you really needed the setup, the reveal.
Yeah.
So there was that was trying to figure that out. And that was made it really nice in the beginning because you had that pattern that you could follow. So you had panel, panel, reveal, panel, panel, reveal. And then you could do that at the end too. So you had your whole rule of threes and stuff going on there as I talk with my hands in front of the camera. Got to remember to keep those down. But
that's okay. That's just audio. No one can see you.
Even better as I'm blocking.
We can, but.
Yes. But no, I mean, I start out, my sketches are really rough. You guys can see this. I start on an envelope. This is how rough we go with our sketches. And nobody sees these but me. But then it's just tightening from there. And we just keep refining and refining and refining. But this one really not, they don't all do this, but this one really drew itself. Once I got into it, it really drew itself. It was all there. And that's such a joy to work on, something that draws itself and just lets me go nuts with the fun part. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a joy to work on.
If I could ask a follow-up question. I totally agree that one thing that drew me to your art initially was that it's very dynamic. Like it really moves, like there's a feeling of action to it. But also, there may not even be an answer to this question, but kind of going back to what Kirsten was saying, but like, so a lot of people can't draw funny. That's like hard. It's like a very specific, like there's a lot of people who can do like fun stuff or silly stuff, but like there's not a whole lot of illustrators or cartoonists who can like draw images that are funny on their own. Like that's one thing I love about like Hark a Vagrant, like the web comic is like,
yes,
Kate Beaton's illustrations are funny, not just the ideas. Like what, I don't know. Is there any art or craft to that?
I don't know how to draw any other way. I started out as a caricature artist at amusement parks and stuff. I've always been a cartoonist. I've always been Bill Watterson.
Oh yeah.
Pogo stuff. Those are my favorites. So I had an art teacher tell me one time, always make sure your characters own the space that they're in and have weight. So that's always, I always want them to take up the space and to have a reason for being there. But I also like movement. There's nothing worse than looking at a book that everything's just dead on the page, just sitting there. So I want them, I appreciate you guys thinking it's funny because it's just me drawing. To me, to me, it's not funny. It's just me drawing.
And we need laughter right now. We need to laugh. So this is just, I think, such an important book just because we need to laugh more in our lives.
Gotta say, not easy to draw funny.
Yeah.
And draw funny books right now. It's been tough to get through all of this and still keep a sense of humor. So I'm glad it comes through. That's basically there's no magic key for drawing funny. It's just how I draw. So
I've heard a lot of comedians start that way too, where they were like trying to be serious and people keep laughing. So they're like, well, I guess maybe I'm a comedian.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Do either of you have like a favorite spread or a favorite character in this book?
Oh, that's a good question.
I like the stink bug. The stink bug is my favorite. She cracks me up.
Yes. I'm noticing. Okay. So she gets a little, like she's little, right? So at first she was hard to see. I love going back and seeing all of these.
Yeah, the page where the skunk gets skunked in particular makes me laugh, where the bug is just like,
She's my favorite. I love her little outfit, cracks me up, and her little high-heeled feet.
Oh my goodness, yeah, I mean, so fun. Yes.
My favorite character might be the skunk, Pierre Muffet, which is just French for skunk. To me, it was just funny. This was like straight out of Pogo, where there'll be like a thing where, you know, this whole big chaos is happening. And then suddenly this character will appear out of nowhere. And they're all like, look, it's blah, 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 the mayor of blah, 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 you know? And that's why I was like, what if, you know, we have all these characters who are just, you know, a deer named deer, you know, a horse named horse. What if there's like this, I mean, he's an obvious like Poirot sort of.
He was supposed to be dressed in an Interpol outfit too. They changed that on me. They went Sherlock Holmes, but not that I'm saying. But he had a total Inspector Clouseau vibe going on.
Oh yeah, so fun. Awesome.
It amused me to have a character who was very important show up, and then he immediately gets undercut as well.
Yes.
So if we were to ever do a sequel, like a spiritual sequel to this book, I think he'd be the one character you bring back to solve another case.
Are we foreshadowing here? Is this a little
There
sneak
is
peek?
Nothing in the works, but I have an idea. I know what it would be.
Ooh,
fantastic.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to read that.
Yay. Oh, that just made my day. I love that. I have to say, I think the mayor might be my favorite. I love how together he seems at first. And then, of course, when his speech isn't his speech,
he throws his head back.
Yes.
Which yes. Jen did some really funny stuff there too, where you can actually read like some of his speech, which is just like pause for applause kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And I love that it's toilet paper, that it gets replaced with toilet paper. Like, what could be funnier than that? Like, nothing, right?
Nothing's funnier than toilet paper.
Toilet paper, underwear, there's nothing funnier.
Yeah, I mean...
I was going to say, this is a book that's ostensibly trying to teach kids fun words. So there's like an educational component to it, but like I wanted it to be just as like actually fun and funny as possible. Cause there's a lot of books out there for kids to like teach them things that are just really boring.
Well, and it makes sense too, because the words are so much fun and the meaning of the words are so fun. You know, the book kind of embodies the meaning of the words in such a beautiful way.
Yeah. And even those other words say. Like skedaddle and things like that, which is once again, that's sort of the southernness coming through there. But there's things like that that hopefully it just kind of is fun in the mouth as you're saying it too.
Definitely. And when books are hilarious to read, kids are learning and they don't even realize it. And that's the best part.
Yeah, no, that's my ultimate goal is if I can just make a bunch of kids run around their houses yelling out, "I've been hornswoggled." That's the goal.
You're not only making the kids happy, but that just makes the adults laugh too.
Of course.
I love a good book that is fun for adults and for kids.
And fake swear words.
Yes. Yeah. I like the fake swear words.
Yes. We can replace them, right? Mm-hmm.
My wife works in the medical field, and she trained herself to say shenanigans instead of other words. And it
what I need to do.
It even, like, improved. She said it improved her outlook and her mood. Like, she was much more empathetic when she was able to use silly words.
My grandmother's word was plunger. She told my aunt that she could say any bad word she wanted, but if she ever heard the word plunger come out of her mouth, she was in real trouble. Oh, so you had a 6-year-old running around the neighborhood saying plunger all the time.
Oh, so, my goodness.
I love it.
That's hilarious. So plunger's a funny word to say too, though. So, you know, we have one last question. Jen, we'll start with you. When someone reads Hornswoggled, what do you hope they feel or learn?
I just hope they have fun. There's so much not fun out there that I just hope they have fun. I hope they find a favorite character. I hope they want to turn the book back over and start again. That's ultimately what you always want. You want the beat up book in the library to have your name on it. So yes. I hope this is the beat up book in the library.
I'm sure it will be. What about you, Josh? What do you hope people feel or learn?
I couldn't say it better. I mean... Yeah, I really hope children have fun. I hope parents have fun or librarians who are, you know, reading it. Because I've done some story times myself before at bookstores and nothing worse than bombing in front of a bunch of kids. So I hope, and you mentioned Bill Watterson earlier. There's a joke in Calvin Hobbes where Calvin always wants to hear Hamster Huey and the Gooey Kablooey. He's like, I've heard that book a million times. So hopefully it's a book that's like not too, that's actually fun to read over and over again. I do hope that like kids learn, you know, just some cool more words for vocabulary. And also just that words are fun and really cool. Cause I mean that I read a lot of books when I was a kid that influenced this in obviously a little bit older, but like the Phantom Tollbooth is one of my favorite books. And that's
such
all
a good
about
one.
Just the wonder of, you know, there's words that grow on trees and the taste in the mouth and there's stuff like that. Yeah. And then I hope that they just feel like Jen was saying like fun. Like when I read the Pogo stuff or Calvin and Hobbes growing up, it's just a lot. I just have a lot of good memories of being in the library reading that stuff because it was just a lot of fun. And that's what I hope.
A big thank you to Josh and Jen for joining us today and giving us a look into the creative process for Hornswoggled. Check out the show notes to learn more about Josh and Jen and their other fabulous work. And don't forget to follow the podcast so you won't miss an episode. We would love it if you would leave a review. Thanks for listening and
happy looking.
Picture Book Look is produced by Kirsty Call and Kim Chafee. Music by James Call.